and welcome to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. And now, experience the good life today.
Aloha from Honolulu, Hawaii and Boston, Massachusetts. I'm Danny Yamashiro with my co-host, Suzanne Maurer.
Aloha.
Welcome to The Good Life. We're here to help unleash your God-given purpose. Can one phone call energize a lifelong passion and calling? Jason Scott Jones is a filmmaker and human rights activist. His film projects include The Stoning of Soraya M., Bella, and Crescendo. He works directly to aid the homeless, peoples facing genocide, and women with crisis pregnancies. Yeah, Jason deals with the tough stuff. He gets his hands dirty. He's not afraid to do what it takes to make a difference. Sort of reminds me about the Lord Jesus Christ, our Lord Jesus Christ. One of the reasons why I love him so much and many love him so much is because he has gotten his, as it were, his hands dirty in our lives, not afraid to do that, so much so that he would come with such love that he would die on the cross for our sins and shed his precious blood on that cross to wash our sins away. Your sins, dear friend, my friend, my sins, our sins. He was buried, and 3 days later, he rose again from the grave. And today, the living Christ calls you to himself. No matter how down, no matter how low, no matter how difficult life may be, no matter how dirty things might seem, he can make you clean. Would you open your heart to Jesus Christ and open your heart and receive him as your Savior and Lord? That's our hope. That's our prayer. Jason Jones is president of Movie to Movement and the human rights education organization, HERO. He lives in Hawaii. Jason, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago.
Tell us more. What was it like there?
You know, I grew up in a typical American family. I think in the 70s and 80s, my parents were teenagers, married for less than a year, divorced before my first birthday. I have five siblings. From a couple of fathers, you know, typical broken American home. My father, when I was, I think before my third birthday, joined the Army, and then really didn't see him again until I was six or seven. But I had a stepfather who entered my life. There were a couple of men who came in and out, but there was one man in particular who really became a father to me and my siblings, even though he was only a biological father to one of us.
Who influenced you most? Was it him? Who influenced you most in your growing up years?
You know, I've really never even thought of that. I had my grandmother. I was very close to my grandmother. So my family, my father was a fallen away Catholic. You know, I never really was aware of what his religion was. My mother would have probably said she was atheist or agnostic, but her father was a radically heterodox Scientologist, as strange as that might sound. That's the only way to describe him. He was a Scientologist, but he sort of had his own. He was the Martin Luther of Scientology, I guess. He broke away from traditional Scientology. And he in many ways, I realized later, he was such a powerful force in forming how I thought, even though at the time I would have rejected that.
In what way?
You know, my grandfather did take ideas seriously, and he was from my grandfather, believe it or not, my family is really cutting edge, and we should get some kind of medal. My grandfather's, my mom, my great-grandmother was married, I think, seven times in the life of the childhood of my grandfather. So he had seven stepfathers who were very abusive, and so my grandfather just became he was the strongest man I've ever met. I mean, in his 60s, he was bench pressing in the 300s. To today, he's 88, and the guy does, you know, he's like, I'm going to go do 20 minutes of sit-ups and a half hour of a handstand. I think as a young boy coming out of a very abusive household, he took defending himself with ideas and also being strong very seriously. And I think that formed me as a young man, where I looked to ideas and also sports and martial arts to defend myself. And I credit my grandpa for giving me this, the importance of ideas. And even though, you know, Scientology is kind of silly.
Where was grandma with the Scientology?
Well, my grandmother was an agnostic, and she was the love of my life as a child. You know, she was, all my good early memories are around my grandmother. And she loved to read. She especially loved to read Westerns. Louis L'Amour. She was always had a Louis L'Amour book in her hand. And she was my best friend. We'd go to the zoo together, the arcade. This is the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And she was diagnosed with cancer when I was in kindergarten. I remember the day I found out. You know, just, I didn't know what cancer was, but I knew how it was presented to me, that this was not a good thing and I could lose my grandmother. And then she ended up dying the summer between fifth and sixth grade for me, which was devastating. And, you know, I cried myself to sleep probably every night from the fifth grade until somewhere in high school it stopped. Wow. Just because I'd missed her so much. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think that kind of, that's how powerful she was in my life.
You received a phone call from your girlfriend, a call that gave purpose to your life. What happened?
Yeah, well, you know, kind of setting up my childhood is, and I say it was a kind of, unfortunately, a very typical childhood today, I guess, for so many people. But, you know, as a child experiencing it, I remember being 6 or 7 years old, lying in bed, my dad in one part of the world, and I'm here, these siblings from different men. And I remember just daydreaming about the kind of household I wanted to create one day when I was a father. And I just had this idea of just this joyful, peaceful, beautiful home. And that kind of daydream carried me through my childhood. And when I was 16, 2 days before my 17th birthday, my high school girlfriend told me she was pregnant. And my response and her response was unusual. And she didn't have the best childhood, which was, I was happy. And I remember thinking, you know, now I get to start the kind of family I've always wanted. And you hear people say that young people get pregnant because they want someone to love them. And I never felt that I wasn't loved, or I never thought that I was longing for love. But what I desired always was to love a child the right way and to create a family the way I wanted a family to be. And so I thought, now here's my chance. And my girlfriend was excited, and we conspired that she would hide that she was pregnant. My birthday was 2 days away. I joined the Army. I went down to the recruiter's office the day or the day after my 17th birthday. And there was a special program for troubled high school students. I was last in my class out of 561 students. That is, you know, it's true. I'm on Facebook Live right now. A lot of my classmates can vouch for that. I was dead last. And also had countless hours of detention. I mean, countless. Always in trouble. So I needed my principal to sign this form saying I was like a delinquent child, which she was very happy to sign. And then I could get into this program. My mother signed this document as well. So I was, shortly after my 17th birthday, I was off to Fort Benning, Georgia. And my girlfriend was doing her part of the plan, which was taking vitamins and wearing baggy sweaters. She was able to hide this pregnancy through all of basic and most of my advanced training. I was in AIT, so I was in the infantry, so basic and advanced training were together. And it was a Sunday morning. I didn't go to church, so when the other soldiers went to church, I had detail. I was very adamant that I wasn't a Christian and I didn't have to go to church. So when the other soldiers went to church, I would be cleaning pots and pans. So I was cleaning pots and pans when a friend came running in to say that my high school girlfriend, you know, my girlfriend had called, and she was crying and she was on the phone, and I ran out to answer the phone. And the only way I can explain it to you is that her soul was crying. And I've only heard anyone else in my life cry like that ever. And that was, you know, all of our friends, Angela Baracchio, when she called me the day her brother died. And I remember when Angie called thinking of when Katie called. It was that same cry, like that soul crying. And Katie just kept saying over and over again, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It wasn't me. And then her father chimed in over the other line and said that he had taken Katie to have an abortion. And just at that moment, a drill sergeant hung up the phone over my shoulder. I wasn't supposed to be on the phone, and I hit him. And a captain, I mean, another drill sergeant pulled me into my captain's office. And I was crying. And this captain began to cry, just looking at me cry, this big, buff Army Ranger, and began crying and just asked me to explain what happened. And when I explained to him what happened, he looked a little confused. He said, "Why would I call the police, Private? Don't you know that abortion is legal?" And as strange as it sounds, I really did not know that abortion was legal. I don't know how much I knew about abortion. I just remember being utterly shocked that this took place. I couldn't believe that it was legal. It seemed unimaginable to me, unspeakable to me. And I wish the whole world could see abortion the way that this uneducated, unchurched high school dropout saw abortion.
A moment that changed the life of Jason Jones, creating a seedbed of creativity, activism that stems from conviction that is not afraid to go into areas of danger, to do what it takes to save a life, a soul cry. Have you ever cried like that? Have you ever been so beyond yourself, so stricken with grief and confusion, a feeling of loss, utter abandonment, and desolateness, that your soul cries? If you have, you know exactly what Jason heard. You know what his girlfriend felt. Perhaps you might know what it feels like, that inexplicable grief that one goes through when they experience loss. When we come back from our break, as you can tell, my friend, Jason Jones, yeah, he's not holding back. And we love it when our guests come in, and that's what we say here, isn't it? We share heart to heart, sharing heart to heart with you. Why? Because that's how God communicates with us. Sometimes in our lives, we become so flashy, so polished, so slick. It's hard to penetrate the heart, you know. What's going on really in you? What's going on really in your friend, your coworker, your family member? We don't often have these times, but we have that today. And through that, Jason's going to share more about his convictions, about life. Stay with us. We'll be back with more.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. This involves exercise and a range of sporting activities. There are times, though, when injuries take place resulting from sports, work, or even the effects of age. In some cases, surgical care is necessary to facilitate proper healing. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, with offices at both Paliomi and Kuakini. Dr. Calvin Oishi has treated patients with the compassion, care, and expertise second to none. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, 484-2042. 484-2042.
There was a time when filling up your gas tank was a full-service experience. The attendant would look under your hood, check your oil and water, check your tires, and wipe your windows, all while your tank's being filled. Burt's Union Service Station on School Street still does it. They also provide auto repair services with master mechanics to give your car the needed fixing to keep it going a long time, so your dollars stretch with a lasting, smoothly running vehicle. Visit them today. Burt's Union on School Street.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. Many people tell me how the Good Life Hawaii radio show has made a difference in their lives, how they've shared our free podcast with friends and family from thegoodlifehawaii.com. Others have connected on Facebook and Twitter. This is made possible through our corporate sponsors. Mahalo to Wahiwa dentist Dr. Kerry Ishihara, Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Burt's Union Service Station on School Street, Michael Beasley of Kaiani, Fran Villarmia Kahavai of Properties International Limited, Chinan and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated, L&S Marine Services Consultants, Arsina Kailihiva of Purium, and orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi. To find out how to become a corporate sponsor, click partners at thegoodlifehawaii.com. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show, Hawaii's only local inspirational Christian talk show on 99.5 The Word, weekdays at 2 p.m. and 12 midnight, providing opportunities to connect family and friends with Jesus Christ.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Jason Jones is not only a producer of movies like The Stoning of Soraya M., Bella, Crescendo, hey, Crescendo, watch that. 15 minutes, man. You watch that, and the end will just, will not only surprise you, but the message and the subtleties of the message that come through throughout. Could you really put that together? Well, they do it. I'd encourage you. But if not for anything else, just check out the ending. You're listening to The Good Life Radio Show. Danny Yamashiro here. Suzanne Maurer, my co-host, and Jason Jones. If you'd like to find out more about Jason, go to movietomovement.com. Again, movietomovement.com. And to get this program in its entirety, maybe you're tuning in, you got the tail end of the last segment, you can hear this and other resources at thegoodlifehawaii.com. Suzanne?
Well, I was just going to say, very few people, when you think of it, know the story of Beethoven. I honestly, as I've shared about Crescendo, I haven't found anyone that said, oh, yes, I know that story. So they need to go online and see Crescendo.
Yeah. And when you show it to your friends, don't tell them it's about Beethoven.
There you go.
Because we sucker punch you at the end.
That's exactly right.
In your book, Jason, The Race to Save Our Century, 5 core principles to promote peace, freedom, and a culture of life. Written with John Zmirek.
Mm-hmm.
How does subhumanism relate with the irony that the right to abortion is freedom that denies a person all human freedoms?
Yeah, really, where the ideology of evil, like the gospel of Jesus Christ over 2,000 years, is a constant struggle against ideologies. And the ideology of evil that we're facing is this subhumanism that denies the incomparable dignity and beauty and worth of the human person, which is a great tragedy. But when you look at all the challenges to the gospel, they provide also great opportunities, because if you look at it was when the Trinity was challenged that the doctrine of the Trinity was really, the church had to think about it and communicate it in an effective way. And I'm hoping that as we come out of this 20th century that was a horror, and the horrors continuing. Just yesterday, in Syria, Yazidi villages were attacked again, and Yazidis were suffering the same kinds of persecution that their ancestors were suffering just 102 years ago. But we have a real opportunity as Christians to communicate to the broader society the truth about the human person. And what is that truth? The truth is that each and every one of us, from the moment of our biological beginning, have this beauty and worth. It's incomparable. I was an atheist for my first 13 years in the pro-life movement. And I was scratching and clawing my way through the darkness to find an anthropology that supported the self-evident truth of the human person. If you look at anybody, you just walk down the street and pick a person and just look at them. It's self-evident that they have this incomparable dignity and beauty. And but what's the source of that? And really only the gospel of Jesus Christ fully communicates the truth about the dignity of the human person. Abortion, it strikes at the very heart of our civilization. It denies the founding principle of our country, that we are endowed by God with inalienable rights. So this country will not survive another 40 years of Roe versus Wade, just like we couldn't have survived slavery forever or segregation forever because they were brutal denials of our founding principle. Abortion is a brutal denial of the founding principle of this country. But beyond that, it is a denial of the founding principle of our civilization, because the West, which is really decaying Christendom, the West was founded with the incarnation. You know, you can look to the writings of the Stoic philosophers, and you can look to Plato even, who talks about taking deformed children outside the city walls and smashing their heads against bricks. You know, this is against rocks. This is Socrates saying this, or Plato saying this. But with the gospel comes something different. And in the second and third century, we had Christians stealing abandoned children off the exposure walls, where Romans would leave their unwanted children on walls to be ripped apart by wild animals. And Christians would cloak themselves at night and sneak and fight off the wild animals to save the children and then raise them as their own, like our pregnancy centers do today. And the Romans thought that that was so creepy. Who would take someone else's child? They never thought that it was creepy to take your own child and leave it on a wall for animals. Just like they find it odd that we run pregnancy centers to care for women in pregnancies and crisis pregnancies. But you're right. Abortion, the right to abortion, denies every other right. And in fact, it strikes at the heart of our human dignity. I say that the race to save our century really is a race to end abortion. It's the first milestone into a culture of life. It's not the last. It's the very first. If we as a nation cannot protect the most vulnerable members of our own families from violence, the violence of abortion, what makes us think we will be thoughtful to somebody from a strange religion and a strange ethnicity in a remote part of the world like the Yazidi? Why would we care if they're suffering genocide when we don't care that literally, a mile down the street that way is Planned Parenthood? And if we don't care about that as Christians, why would we care about what's happening in northern Kurdistan?
Your take, Jason, on the obvious gap of consciousness. When you describe it that way, it's quite clear. You know, we would permit something, but we won't permit something else. But the contradiction of it, a Planned Parenthood right around the corner and genocide taking place somewhere else, the same person can be fighting vehemently against the genocide and yet allow this. So how do you explain that incongruity?
Well, you know, we're in the age of slacktivism, where a lot of activism is co-branding. It's just saying to the world, I'm a good person. And I've been really greatly influenced by the anthropologist René Girard. And, he talks about every society picks a vulnerable community to destroy. It's very easy to stand up and defend a vulnerable community outside of your area of influence. We can stand up against evils in other parts of the world that aren't in any way connected with us. But once they become connected to the political life of our community, it becomes very challenging. So we can condemn China for what they maybe are doing to ethnic minorities. But it's harder for us to speak out against what's happening in Iraq and Syria or the Planned Parenthood down the street, because that directly involves us. Our foreign policy shattered Iraq and Libya, and we were attempting to shatter Syria. And so we were in a very real way responsible for those disasters. We are responsible for Planned Parenthood down the street. So we can stand up to China for its policies to Tibet, because that in no real way involves the life of our political community. And we have no influence over it either. So I find that people are the most quiet in those areas where they have the most influence.
Father Richard Neuhaus stated, "The greatest tragedy in American political history is that the pro-life flag is not being planted firmly on the Republican side of the debate." Do you agree?
Yeah, Father Neuhaus played a big influence on me, and I'm a fan of his. And yeah, he had complained that the pro-life flag was being planted in the Republican Party and not the Democrat Party. And I think what's sad is that the pro-life flag is not firmly planted in either of our two major political parties. And we need to plant that flag deep. I'm a Republican. I'm a very proud member of the Republican Party. I know we live in a society where we're all supposed to pretend we don't have political affiliations. I am a conservative. I am a Republican. I have very dear friends who are Democrats. I just was in Congress taking this young Yazidi woman and a Swedish doctor who I'm making a film with around Congress. And most of my friends on Capitol Hill are Democrats. And they said, "We're going to out you. You must be some kind of secret Democrat. All your elected official friends are Democrats." But no. You know, here's the beautiful truth, Danny, about America. They say we disagree on so much. Americans today do not disagree on anything. There was a time we disagreed on a lot. We do not disagree on our ends. Everybody, and by everyone, I mean, you know, most of us, with the kooks aside, we want everybody's child to have access to great education, to great health care. We want everyone's kid to have the same access to economic opportunity that our children have. You couldn't have said that about America 60 years ago. We were divided around ethnicity and religion and so many things. But today, we really are not. We want to foment it and create all these false divisions. We share the same goals. What we disagree on is how to achieve our shared goals. We want everyone to have access to great health care. I think the best way to do that is let the market provide it and keep government out of it. Someone else thinks the best way to have it is to have government invade it. Someone thinks the best way to create economic opportunity is to have the government regulation and government get involved in the economy. I think the best way is to get government out of the economy. We don't disagree on what we want. We disagree on how we achieve our shared goals. But this all goes back to that pro-life flag. It goes back to the founding principle of this country that we believe that we are all equal in dignity and we should all be treated justly and equally. And Roe versus Wade is going to unravel that in our lifetime. And that's why we need to unravel Roe versus Wade.
Jason Jones speaks using the word unravel. Unravel. Something that has become a fortified part with many layers of fortification of our current society. So the question is, how do you unravel that? How do you turn the tide? How do you make the change? How do you do it? And if you have an idea of how to do it, is it even possible? Perhaps we should ask the question, is it plausible to do it? We'll talk about that with Jason Jones when we come back. You know, we're dealing with real life. When you deal with real life, caring about life, loving life, yeah, wanting the same thing but having different ideologies at the core that don't allow harmony, don't allow certain things. These are deeply embedded. Perhaps you're embedded one way and your friend or your family member is embedded another way. Well, we'll wrestle a little bit more with this and make a difference when we come back. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
A healthy smile can make all the difference, but where do you go for healthy teeth? Dr. Kerry Ishihara is a specialist in general dentistry in Waiahua. With more than 20 years of experience, Dr. Ishihara serves the people of Waiahua, including a special focus on military families. As a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, he understands the needs of soldiers and families in our military community. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is proud to have Dr. Kerry Ishihara as an anchor sponsor. Call him at 621-8281. That's 621-8281.
Do you need a specialist in cosmetic dentistry? Someone who can bring the best in you from the inside out? Let Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa help you. His warmth, compassion, and expertise provides all the assurance needed for your dental needs. Visit Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry in Kaneohe. Call him at 235-4525 to make an appointment today. That's 235-4525. Or visit jeffmiyazawa.com. Windward Family Dentistry, where a lifetime of smiles is created.
Hear me calling.
listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Jason Jones was the producer in 2012 of the TV movie Mother Mary Ann, Portrait of a Saint, and an executive producer of the new film Voiceless. He's with us today in studio. Danny Yamashiro here, Suzanne Maurer, my co-host, Jason Jones. You can find out more about Jason at movietomovement.com. And this program in its entirety for free. This and other resources at thegoodlifehawaii.com. When you hear movie to movement, yeah, well, not only is Jason on the move, but he is part of a movement. He's stirring a movement. In some ways, he's cutting new paths for a movement, drilling things deeper and stronger. Jason Jones, how can we teach people in the midst of ideological challenges, deadlocks, how can we teach people to love peace?
I mean, that's the challenge. I mean, I am probably the worst person I know. Like, if you, I'll do this radio show, I'll be driving home. Someone cuts me off in traffic while I'm praying, listening to, you know, Salem. And I'll be like, hey, bro, pull over, you know, pull over.
You want to use your martial arts skills?
But I thank God for that. You know, I thank God for that. I'm like, wow, I'm like, if I was one of Saddam Hussein's sons, I would have made Uday Hussein look like, you know, a saint, because there is a self-willness in me. And so this is where I'm grateful to the gospel, which tells us something. We only have two choices in how we look to other folks, which is either I'm going to sacrifice you to myself, or I'm going to sacrifice myself to you. This idea that I can walk around the world and try to have this equal relationship with everyone, I'm never, ever going to pull that off. And so I always look to Christ as my example and say that I really want to sacrifice myself for the other. And I fail a lot, and I fall down a lot. But that's really where peace comes in, that we live in a world that looks to the other, to take advantage of the other, to use the other. In extreme examples, like what's happening in Syria and Iraq today, destroy and consume the other.
What's in it for me?
Yeah, what's in it for me? And so I think the peace begins at home with ourselves and trying to love and serve the other. In Hawaii, we have a great example and opportunity to do that with all of our neighbors without homes. I can walk out the studio and take a left or take a right, and I'm going to see neighbors without homes, and what are we doing for them? But also those closest to us, our boss, you know, our own family members. But as Americans too, when we look to the political life, we are the most blessed people who've ever lived. We're the most blessed and privileged Christians who've ever lived. You know, as we're doing this show right now, through my little phone, on my Facebook Live, I'm reaching thousands of people around the world that would have taken, you know, a church committee, you know, months and months of planning and fundraising and organizing to reach as many people as we're reaching right now through Facebook Live. And then to put this radio show on top of it, you know, maybe the Apostle Paul wouldn't have talked to this many people directly in his entire life. Well, we are blessed. We are privileged. And so with that comes also the duty to share the gospel.
Going back along these lines, but going back to making headway, unraveling a political stronghold. In June of 2012, June 1, 2012, an article in Crisis Magazine, you once said in a room full of politicians, Jason, that even if the right succeeds in taking Washington by storm, the battle will never be won until the pro-life movement has taken Hollywood. How realistic is that aim?
Well, the good news is I think we've made more headway in Hollywood than we have made in Washington, D.C. And if, you know, well, let's just look to abortion. Damon of Athens, the great musicologist, said, "Give me the songs of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." When I was a young student at the University of Hawaii working at the state legislature, I knew that I wanted to look to either media or law for my vocation. And I realized, I'm never going to graduate law school. Who are we kidding? And so that law school was not going to be an opportunity for me. So I looked to media. I never really kind of thought of entertainment. I thought of documentaries. I never thought of feature films. But if you look to the songs of our nation on abortion, whether it's Nicki Minaj's song Autobiography or Kid Rock's song Abortion or Kenny Rogers' song Water and Bridges, our own local girl, Nicole Scherzinger, was recently made a lot of controversy around her comments about being pro-life in Dirty Dancing, where she played a post-abortive woman. You know, when you look to films like Juno and Bella and Waitress and Knocked Up and August Rush, movie after movie after movie tells the truth that abortion, of course, not only destroys the most vulnerable member of the human family, the child in the womb, but it brutalizes, as a co-victim, the mother and the father. And artists in Hollywood are telling this. I received a text yesterday that in the new Netflix comedy special with Sarah Silverman, that she opens up about how her abortion devastated her. Mm. We had Dave Chappelle in his Netflix original special from a month ago just go off on abortion. And then Louis C.K. about 2 weeks ago in his Netflix special, there was controversy where he came out against abortion. And so when you have Sarah Silverman, who would call herself pro-abortion, I'm sure, Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle, but they're all telling the truth that abortion is violent, that abortion is brutal, and that abortion leaves the men and women who participate in it devastated in its wake. We are winning the war in Hollywood, and we have a duty to tell true and beautiful stories. Not propagandists. You know, there's enough propaganda. There are enough commercials coming out of Hollywood. But we want to tell, as Tolkien would say, true myths, myths that are true. And you can't tell any truth about the human person that doesn't recognize or reveal their beauty and their dignity. That's not true.
Out of the five principles to promote peace, freedom, and culture of life in your new book, The Race to Save Our Century, of the five core principles right now as we speak, which one emerges as most substantial?
Well, okay. What I love about these whole life principles, which were really the Christians applying the gospel to political problems over 2,000 years, each of these principles were revealed. And the one that I would like to talk about, because I think each one of them, we only need one of them to be accepted by our community, our political community, to save us from the horrors of the last century. That's the good news. Just one out of five saves you from all the horrors of the past 100 years. All five of them, you're living in this beautiful culture of life and civilization of love. But let's do solidarity. Let's just talk about solidarity, because what is solidarity? Solidarity is the strong sharing the burdens of the vulnerable. And the vulnerable are not weak. And those in positions of privilege aren't necessarily strong. You can take an Olympic swimmer and drop him in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and he's vulnerable. He's not weak, but he's been placed in an impossible situation. Now, I can row up to him in a boat and save his life, not because I'm better than him or stronger than him, but I'm blessed to be in a boat. And when you see a person who's homeless, you don't know. You know, one of the things my grandfather, who was a Scientologist, would always rail against Christians is that "there but before the grace of God go I" is a disgusting Christian myth, because they got there through their own choices. Well, no. If I see somebody who's homeless, I can look at this, you know, if I see a man, he's 45 years old, you know, he's disheveled, he smells like booze, he's broken, he maybe is, you know, yelling at me. He could have been sexually and physically abused as a child by family members. You know, we don't know. He could have seen the most tragic, horrible things in a war. He could have lost his wife and children in a car accident in his 20s. We cannot even begin to understand what they've experienced. But what we do know is through circumstance, we are in a privileged position. And we have a duty, we have an obligation to live in solidarity with the vulnerable, to share our strengths with the vulnerable. For example, in Hawaii, we don't have that many neighbors without homes. That if we truly as a community decided to share their burdens together, and we don't need the government to do this, they could be cared for. And now it's not easy. When you have people with mental illness and drug addiction and all their kinds of problems, it's not easy, but it's doable. It's doable, but we just need to have that habit of solidarity. And not to be a do-gooder, that's the hard thing. I never want to be perceived as a do-gooder or uppity and high and mighty. You know, I have to recognize that I'm there, but before the grace of God go I. And that I have been blessed every step of the way in ways that are only miraculous. I had 3 Article 15s my first year in the Army. You're supposed to get kicked out of the military after 1. Why wasn't I kicked out? I don't know. I had 2 my second year. 5 in 2 years. How would my life have changed if I was kicked out of the Army that first year? I can't imagine where I would have ended up. Became a father at 18 with a local girl, and her father was a migrant worker from a local sur who came over here, made a good life for himself, and when I got out of the Army, we could live in the back of his house. What would have happened to my family if I didn't have that opportunity? And if he didn't go buy me a car and allow me to work part-time jobs so I could go to Leeward and then the University of Hawaii.
But by the grace of God.
But by the grace of God.
Yeah. But by the grace of God, go I, go Jason, go Suzanne, go you. And by the grace of God, we are sustained. We have life. We're able to live and move and have our being. When we come back, Jason, let's take a moment. You've shared about your life, bringing us up to date. I think it doesn't surprise me, my friend, why you have so many Democrat friends in D.C. Authenticity is a word I see. And that's something we can't fake. And so here it is. This is who I am. This is what I believe. I'm not cloaking anything, but I'm moving forward with my convictions. Respectable, admirable. More with Jason Jones when we come back. Stay with us.
On the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky, leave it to me. I lead you home.
In times of economic challenge, opportunities arise. All we need is someone to say, I believe in you. Michael Beasley, a senior executive of Kaiani Team Aloha, has seen Kaiani products improve the quality of people's lives. Michael Beasley says Kaiani's mission is to empower people globally to experience better health, wealth, and a lot of fun. Contact Michael Beasley at 277-9528. Live outside the 9-to-5 workday. Become the CEO of your own business while Kaiani handles the details. That's Michael Beasley at 277-9528. 277-9528. Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. There are times when injuries take place. In some cases, surgical care is necessary. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi with offices at both Palimomi and Kuakini. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi at 484-2042, 484-2042.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. Many people tell me how the Good Life Hawaii radio show has made a difference in their lives, how they've shared our free podcast with friends and family from thegoodlifehawaii.com. Others have connected on Facebook and Twitter. This is made possible through our corporate sponsors. Mahalo to Wahiwa dentist Dr. Kerry Ishihara, Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Burt's Union Service Station on School Street, Michael Beasley of Kaiani, Fran Villarmia Kahavai of Properties International Limited, Chinen and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated, LNS Marine Services Consultants, Arsina Kailihiva of Purium, and orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi. To find out how to become a corporate sponsor, click partners at thegoodlifehawaii.com. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show, Hawaii's only local inspirational Christian talk show on 99.5 The Word, weekdays at 2 p.m. and 12 midnight, providing opportunities to connect family and friends with Jesus Christ.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
MovieToMovement.com. That's how you can find out more about Jason Jones. MovieToMovement.com. You're listening to The Good Life Radio Show. Danny Yamashiro here with Suzanne Maurer. It's a blessing to have you with us today. I'm going to push back a little bit, Jason. You mentioned, and I don't disagree, that progress is being made in the pro-life movement. Someone may say, however, Jason Jones, okay, I'll give you that. But there are tons of movies that are propagating, perpetuating a completely different ideology, the stronghold that we were talking about. So, looking forward, what do you see if progress continues to be made? Is there a tipping point? Maybe you've already implied that we have hit the tipping point, or maybe there. I don't know. What would you say about that if someone says, well, I don't quite believe that big change is really being made? Maybe a trickle, but not a big one.
I know I can understand how people feel that, you know, but if you look at even the polls of the young folks on abortion, if we're just talking about abortion, young folks today are pro-life. Students for Life of America is probably the most vibrant, active student group on college campuses across America. Today, it's countercultural to be pro-life. But here's why I'm hopeful. It's not just movies. They now have 3D printer ultrasounds. Mm-hmm. So now young mothers are going to be walking into the office, not with a photograph of their child, and definitely not the old grainy black and white photograph. They're going to have these 3D ultrasound, beautiful photos in full color, and they're going to have little models that are printed from a 3D printer that they can put in the palm of their coworkers' hands. Can Roe versus Wade survive science? No. Can it survive the progress of technology? Planned Parenthood so shamelessly came out a couple of years ago and asked people not to share their ultrasound photos on Facebook because it was undermining choice in America. Well, of course it is. When people understand, when I was young, you know, people didn't know what abortion was. I had a relative after this experience happened to me said, well, Jason, it was just a grain of sand and a teaspoon of blood. That's all your baby was. Well, this was a third trimester forced abortion. I mean, that's absurd. But nobody can believe that anymore. Now, here's the crisis. The philosopher Peter Kraft from Boston University has said that we're in a real bind now because we've convinced America that abortion destroys a human person. What happens if they accept that fact? Mm-hmm. So that's the challenge now. We've convinced America and the world that abortion destroys an innocent human being. But we're going to have an even worse society in the wake of that if the laws don't change to protect that human person from violence. So that's the position we are in. And I think that, but I am hopeful. You know, I meet a lot of young Democrats. They're very, very pro-life. And young Republicans that are very, very pro-life. I was invited to speak at University of Kentucky. And I was surprised when the head of the club who came to pick me up was openly lesbian. And she had all of her you know, regalia or her, you know, her pins on and this and that, and her pro-life pin. And it took me aback. And then I thought, wow, well, really shouldn't respecting and protect and calling for the protection of the most vulnerable members of the human family from violence transcend our religion? And of course it should. You don't have to be a Christian to be opposed to racism, to legal religious discrimination. But the abolitionists early on, these were Christians. These were hardcore Bible-believing Christians. The abolitionists, the Reverend Martin Luther King, it wasn't his PhD that inspired him. It was the gospel of Jesus Christ. But it transcends that. Now you don't have to be a Christian to be opposed to segregation. Everyone's opposed to segregation. There's going to come a day in our lifetime where abortion is unthinkable and religion's going to have nothing to do with it because these Christians have Christianized the temporal order, which is that is our job. Our job is to have positive law correspond to the truth of the human person. That is our job, so that even non-Christians today in the Western world think you should care for the poor. But that was not thought of anywhere in the world before the introduction of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So we've taught the world to love and care for the poor. Now it's our job to teach the world to love and care for the child in the womb.
Now you said things could get, these aren't your exact words, but you said things can get worse when people begin to believe that the destruction of a child in the womb is wrong. Describe what that means, or maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah, well, imagine we live in a society where people say, yeah, it's a person, so what? Yeah, so what? We can kill people when it's convenient. Okay. Mother Teresa said, it's a society that can kill its own born, a society that can kill its own unborn child can do anything, any evil. And, you know, you look at the drone program under Barack Obama, not to make it political, but the drone program under Barack Obama, to me, was rooted in Roe versus Wade. Over 1,000 civilians killed. And the media didn't want to cover it. Why? Because it didn't fit their narrative. But the reality is, under Bush, there was one civilian killed. And so a country that has no problem with the legal destruction of their own children, are they really going to be mindful to a drone program in Yemen and Pakistan? And the Archbishop Fulton Sheen, in a lecture at Catholic University in September of 1945, said that it is inevitable that we as a nation will decriminalize abortion. And it became inevitable on August 6th, because that's when we as a country said there are no boundaries. Mother Teresa is purported to have said in the 70s that the fruit of abortion is nuclear war. So here you have these two great thinkers, these two great saints. Fulton Sheen says the fruit of the bomb is abortion, and Mother Teresa saying the fruit of abortion is nuclear war. And to me, they are intimately connected, because what we have to say is that the innocent human person is inviolable. And that is our role as Christians, and it's a beautiful job. It's a privilege for us to say, like the second person of the Trinity, I want to live in solidarity with the scapegoats of our world. I want to become a scapegoat for our world, that I will be in solidarity with the vulnerable to the point that I am as vulnerable as they are. That is the gospel message.
We're on the brink of potential savagery unlike ever known before. Jason, you're trying to push back against that. Policies are going to have to be changed. You're doing work in D.C. As a closing, parting shot, tell us what kind of reshaping needs to be done in the formation of future society so that that savagery does not emerge in the way that it is forecasted to possibly emerge.
Well, Danny, I like how you said that, the future. You know, we saved the Shire, but not for us. This isn't about us. I'm blessed three ways. I'm blessed to be an American, I'm blessed to be a Christian, and I am blessed to live in Hawaii. And these are the three greatest blessings anyone could ask for. You said that I come across authentic. Hawaii doesn't allow for affectation. It's just not allowed. You can't show up and it's going to be knocked away. In Hawaii, the life of the land is perpetuated in righteousness was the motto of the Kingdom of Hawaii. That became the motto of the state of Hawaii. We have to be thoughtful to our posterity. That's what I would say. Each and every one of us has to order our personal life decisions in a way that puts our posterity first. When I spend money today, how is this going to affect my yet-to-be-born grandchildren? You know, when I vote next November, how is that going to affect my yet-to-be-born grandchildren? We have to live in a way that is thoughtful to our posterity, because we are blessed that we had generation after generation after generation of our ancestors were thoughtful to us. They were thoughtful for us. And we live. You know, when I was recently in Iraq and Kurdistan, a friend of mine, a fellow American, said when I came back, "Didn't you feel ashamed of being an American because of all the privileges we have and they don't have?" And I said, "Ashamed? No, I felt grateful. I felt grateful that my ancestors sacrificed and worked and built a political community that was orderly and peaceful and stable, that I could be born into it and be a high school dropout and have economic opportunity and political and religious freedom. I'm not ashamed. I'm grateful. I'm ashamed of maybe some of the ways we've behaved as a nation state around the world today. But I am not at all ashamed at our prosperity and our freedom. I will be ashamed if I don't pass this on to my great-grandchildren."
And you are. You are passing it on. You are in the process of doing that. You have done that. And we already know you are in the process and will do that. Dear one, I hope you've been encouraged today by the insights of Jason Jones. You can find out more about him at movietomovement.com. You know, God's timing is indeed perfect. And there's no better time than right now to share the love of Christ with someone near you. And if you haven't done so, look, this is the perfect moment for you to open your heart to Jesus Christ. Would you do it? Go to thegoodlifehawaii.com, click Get to Know Jesus. I've got a special presentation for you there. Here's a psalm for you. Psalm 139, verse 16. "Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." It's always a blessing to be with you. A special thank you to Jason Jones, movietomovement.com. Until next time, along with my co-host, Suzanne Maurer, technical producer Chaz Ontai, guest coordinator Jamie Lee Kwai, and web designer Arlen Nagata, I'm Danny Yamashiro. Remember, the Lord is with you. Let Him unleash your God-given purpose today.
Thank you for listening in on today's broadcast of The Good Life with host Danny Yamashiro. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you. The Good Life radio program is listener-supported, and we'd like to encourage you to pray about becoming a sponsor or donor. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to minister to God's people through The Good Life. To become a sponsor or to make a donation, please visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. That's thegoodlifehawaii.org. And may God richly bless you with The Good Life. Just leave it to me. I'll leave